Welcome to another edition of In Focus. My name is Bob Perot. Well, the oldest building in Perth, known as the Red House, has been sold. You may have seen that sold sign out on the lawn. And we're going to be talking about its future today. Joining us, Scott Somerville with Century 21 Explorer Realty. Scott, you brought the story to us, and we really appreciate that. Welcome to Lake 88.
Thank you, Bob.
And also with us, James Forrester, whose family had owned the building since the 1920s. Mr. Forrester, thanks so much for being here.
You're welcome.
And with us, a familiar voice to Lake 88. His name is Brent McLaren, chair of the Heritage Perth Advisory Panel, renowned volunteer in the town of Perth as well. He is also the town crier. Brent, welcome back to Lake 88.
Should I ring a bell, Bob, or should we just go informally?
Oh, yay, here we go. All right. So, Scott, we're going to talk about you, or talk with you first, about the sale of the building and really the emotions that that brought up in you and really how it sort of lit a fire under what you thought should happen. And you got people on board. So just tell us the story of the sale, if you could.
Well, I guess it started a number of years ago. I met James. I've known some of his family for a long time. And I met James when I was actually my first listing. He was friends of the owners. And way back then, he was talking about, you know, the history of this house. And fast forward to last year, I think it was, he came and said, you know, I think it's time to look at trying to find somebody to do something with the house, very involved with the history. And I think you'll find he seems to be involved all over Ontario with historical buildings. So he let his wishes be known to me, and I knew some people, and I, you know, tried different areas, and I came up with a couple of people that I thought would be a good fit with James and the ideas. And, unlike a usual real estate deal, I brought the buyers and the sellers together, and we discussed things around the table, the needs and what could possibly work. And we were able to come up with a deal. And the main thing, trying to preserve as much as the historical value of the building as we can, you know, whatever that may be. And, James had been talking with Algonquin College, and they're willing to take it and, you know, using their obvious expertise and tie it into their programs and their planned degree program. And they'll receive the materials and want to play a key role in however it goes on to preserve as much of the history as they can. So.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that history now. Before we get to you, James, Brent, want to bring you in here. And when it comes to the sale of a building like this, there are certain things that the Heritage Perth Advisory Panel is looking for. And obviously, you folks wanted to play a role when you heard about this happening.
Oh, long before that, actually. The first presentation I remember on this building is probably 20 years ago. And again, 2015, we went through a very long process of looking at the building, looking at all the attributes of the building, just coming up with any idea on how you can preserve such an amazing part of Perth's story. I grew up in what is now the St. Lawrence Seaway, and many of the homes that surrounded me are sitting in Upper Canada Village. So I was quite aware of how these homes can be taken apart, literally numbered, put back together as a jigsaw puzzle. But there's an interesting part to this building when it comes to our understanding of our story in Perth, is that this was the pinnacle building for so many years around which the entire Perth community hubbed. To see it deteriorate, to lose it in any way, is to lose an important part of our historic soul. We just couldn't run it. I think everyone on heritage management felt that way. And certainly everyone in the town felt that way. But undertaking a project of this magnitude is not easy. And we looked at options. We looked at, could it be picked up and moved in an entirety, and then look at the problems moving it down Craig Street. And so it has been a wonderful blend here that it will not only be preserved, but the students studying in the heritage programs at Algonquin College will get firsthand knowledge of how this building is put together. Now, I've been fortunate enough to have been inside. I've seen where the fires were, where the walls were, where the things were preserved. It is an amazing story in and of itself, but understand it, that it will be taken down, that students will learn from every nail, from every board, from every axe mark, and that that then will be potentially resurrected on the Algonquin College campus. This is beyond belief for us. So generations will be able to connect right back into our heritage. And that's what heritage management is really all about. It's trying to facilitate the preservation of our story for future generations. And this is just one of those admirable things to be happening.
More history in a second. James, you've been nodding along and smiling quite a bit as you listen to Brent speaking. Before we talk about the history of the house, just your reaction to hearing the plans from both Scott and Brent, and just how important it is to preserve the history, but also for it to be a learning tool.
Yes, we've now been working for 7 years. I suppose if you discount the last 2 years, it's really actually only 5 years, but we have been working directly with Algonquin. And as Brent mentioned, the 200th anniversary was in 2016. And so that was really the point at which we, you know, we've always been very hands-on. I mean, maybe I'll run this back a bit, because we did live in the Westport and Perth area, and we deconstructed and reconstructed a number of log and timber frame buildings in the 70s and 80s. So we had a lot of experience with what was necessary in order to preserve these buildings. If this building were a stone building or a brick building, if it was Injava or McMartin House, we would not need to deconstruct them. They'll be there 200 years from now. But unfortunately, I'm going to move slightly out of the way here in this picture. The radio audience cannot see, but there is a door right behind me here cut into that front wall. And there was already a door on the side, so it badly compromised this corner here, because the building is held together with dovetails. And I'm still trying to figure out what's happening to the southeast corner. So that's just one example. So I think it's in the nature of the style of architecture, and the fact that after 206 years, as strong as the wood was, it's just starting to give way. So I think that kind of brings in our perspective, A, on what kind of building it is and what's necessary to make sure it's still around 200 years from now.
Now, this is going to be the hardest question I ask you, James. Can you give us a brief history of the building? And that's why it's so hard, because I'm sure you could go on for hours about it. But if you could,
yes.
You know, just sort of give us a brief history of the building, and really for any of our listeners who don't know, sort of highlight the significance.
I think it really came, again, another 200th anniversary. So 3 years later, we celebrated the 200th of Charles Lennox, who was the fourth Duke of Richmond. There was a banquet given in the house, and I believe he actually stayed in the house at least overnight. So he was the commander-in-chief of British North America, and he was on a tour of the Rideau Waterway and came to Perth for that purpose. And it was at the banquet, it's recorded, that he announced that the house should be painted red. I believe it did have some siding, but the siding should be painted red. And so they took that as an order. I mean, here's the commander-in-chief, essentially the equivalent of the governor-general, saying he did have 6 glasses of brandy and water. Maybe I should preface this. But essentially, that's the reason it's the red house. Now, my wife, Stephanie, painted the front door red. So we have a kind of visual reference. And this actually wasn't my idea. One of my tenants put a British flag in the window, so I just copied the idea. So it does have some references, but most people are going like, where's the red house? I don't see any red house. So that's our kind of vision in a nutshell, is to bring it back to that period of the 1819 period, when it was, in fact, the red house.
And it served many purposes over the course of its history, too, right?
Well, its original purpose. Now, this is in some debate with military historians, but my feeling is, as near as I can come up with, why is this building here? Well, it's the Perth Military District 200 years ago. And in effect, it's British Army headquarters, and it's an officer's mess. Generally, they don't send out a royal engineer and the sappers and miners to build taverns and inns. So the whole idea is that it had some military purpose. Everything in Perth had a military purpose. So I'm pretty confident in saying this is actually British Army headquarters at that time for the Perth Military District. And to the thing I was reflecting on recently, because I gave a talk at the Ontario Heritage Conference two weekends ago in Brockville, and I was trying to get them to think back to 1816. And there's no Rideau Canal. There's just the Rideau River. And there's no Bytown. There's no Ottawa. There's just this falls, where the name came from, the falls dropping into the Ottawa River. So it's so early. And effectively, the Perth Military District is like a placeholder or a marker on the map that says, okay, we're not sure what route we're going to take to get from Kingston to the Ottawa River, but it's somewhere here. And effectively, that's the reason Perth is where it is.
What is it? Go ahead.
I'm sure Brent could elaborate on that, I think.
But before he does, in recent years, what has it been used as?
Oh, in terms of, okay, so British Army headquarters. Eventually, it becomes an inn by 1819. It's an inn, but because it's the largest in interior space, it's also the first churches of various denominations. It's the schoolhouse. At one time, it had a printer who I believe printed flyers and posters and the newspaper, presumably. So it had a lot of functions. And then in a nutshell, there are four families. So there's the Adamsons, who were the innkeepers, the Frasers, who most of the 19th century was referred to as the Fraser House, then the McDowells. And 100 years ago, my great uncle, Fred Forrester, bought the house. So it's been in my family for three generations.
And that's amazing.
So I don't know. There's three generations. I'm the third Forester to paint this house. And I did. This picture is 2016. And that was when I painted the entire house. And it's a big house to do. But it's a curious relationship between this building and my family. I'm still trying to figure out what it is.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm going to ask you to send me that picture if you could, James.
Okay, for sure.
Because we'll put it up with this interview on Lanark Leads today when we do post it. Before I get back to you, Scott, Brent, when we look at this building being preserved, being rebuilt, at Algonquin College, I guess one of the biggest questions is, with so many different functions over the years, how do you rebuild the interior? You know, what do you do? What particular period do you go for when you start to put all of that together?
All of them. Among the list as well, it was the courthouse. It was the gathering place in town where people went to hear the various announcements that were being made. I often have studied the stories of the sergeant at arms, and he would show up with a drummer, and the drummer would beat the attention, and people, he would make announcements. And if tradition holds true, they would have been then posted literally on the doorway to the Red House. And that's where people heard the news, where they read the news, the posts for the day. So it is a profound, what do you do with a building of that? Well, first, I'm sure James will tell you, the stories are that the inside of the building was all droppable down ceilings and that they could change the configurations of the rooms on a moment's notice. When the Reverend William Bell would hold a church service, it would be upstairs and you had to climb the ladder. There were no stairs. You had to climb the ladder to get upstairs to go to that service. And they're very interesting to read Bell's own notes about how he restricted people who could climb the ladder. So what do you build it back to? That's going to be a decision for the people who take the building apart. What is there? What can they actually see? And then using their wisdom, their knowledge, their eyes, and their hands, how do we then put it into a practical building for today's use while preserving its history, preserving its story, and preserving the wood? James mentioned, it's probably built in the style of the great British blockhouses. The dovetail joints in the sides are massive. There are stories about the wood in the building being felled almost on site. Large oak trees being felled and turned into the building. Again, as it comes down, we're going to see that. We're going to see 200-year-old wood that, it'll be much older than that. It's been in place for 200 years. So it is going forward. And that, I think, is the key from a heritage point of view, and certainly from the point of view of the Heritage Management Committee, is that this is our story going forward. How can we help? How can we make it happen? In our lifetime, money is short, and projects like this are one in a million. They just don't come along. What can we do, everyone in town, in Heritage Perth, to help preserve this story, to preserve the heart of our community? And Scott, truly, the Red House was the heart of our community.
It's Scott, there's a lot of responsibility in a project like this, and you've got some people who are firm believers in that this should be carried out. And obviously, they'll be listening to so many different people as the house is dismantled, moved, and then reconstructed. Just speak a little bit to the responsibility of doing that. And really, if you could also talk a little bit about the role that Algonquin College will be playing in all of this.
Well, as it started, it's Jim and the buyers are Ayrton James Property Development. And we've gone to get the deal done, make sure everybody was on the same page. And I've spoken with Algonquin College since the deal was done. Nobody knows what we're going to find when they start taking it up. We assume everything's going to be good. If it's not, what do we do then? It's already a very cost-intensive project. Like Algonquin's uniquely suited. We're very lucky to have some of that caliber right here in Perth. But if we get it, if we start disassembling it and there's dry rot, there's whatever in it, there's a possibility the whole building can't be redone. Like it may need to be preserved some other way. But they have not the technology, they have the knowledge of what to do it and how to best preserve what they can. So that's not anything that either James nor Ayrton James Property nor James Forrester can predict or we're all hoping everybody's on the same page. We'd love to see everything happen, but nobody can call it until it's apart, and Algonquin's very keen to help and play a key role in it, but I'm certainly not qualified to tell them, what to do or how they're going to do it. I just know it's going to be cost intensive, and I would think if there's any, people in Perth want to donate to it, I'm quite sure they'd take money to go towards this project, because it's not going to be a cheap thing at all.
I'm sure that in the coming weeks that we'll hear about a way to funnel those donations towards the project, probably from Algonquin College or some other venue. But really, that will come. And when it does come, we will do our darndest to make sure that we share that with our listeners who would like to find a way to donate. I'd say right now, if anybody would like to make a donation right now, probably the best venue would be to contact Algonquin College. Maybe once this project is getting closer to being underway. Scott, it's just such an incredible story. It really is. And it's almost, It's almost like a time capsule. You've no doubt sold buildings that have been aged before, but probably nothing this important.
The only other one that I sold that has the cadre of this is the Shaw's of Perth building. That's an extremely interesting building, and the history and the seeing it is pretty amazing. So
yeah, but it stayed in the same place.
Yes, that's right. It's not going to be disassembled. Yeah.
No, it's not. We have just a couple of minutes left, and James, I wanted to speak to you again, and by all means, sir.
This is something I'm going to throw up another picture here, so I'll have to describe it. So this is a beam. We had the loose fill removed very recently, and so now we're seeing the whole roof burnt in 1865, and that's when it no longer was the Red House. And as this is just an example of the beams up in the attic and how charred they are. And it's curious because when I mentioned this to Scott, he said they look very similar to the Shaw building. So clearly at one time, the roof of the Shaw building burnt as well.
Yeah.
So, really? So you do find these anomalies here.
For sure. And what we're looking at is a picture of a beam as you described, and it's completely charred. Mm-hmm. You've no doubt seen campfires that are out, and you've got that dark charcoal with almost a grid-like pattern on it. It looks like broken down pavement, and no doubt if you touch it, it would flake off. But you know, Brent, you look at this type of damage, I guess you'd say, this kind of wear that is expected in buildings of this age, and really it just reinforces the need to preserve it, doesn't it?
Not only that, you would be almost amazed when you visit, look at most of the heritage buildings in Perth, how many of them have had fires. And yes, indeed, there were fires in the Shaw building. And Jim will tell you, there were fires in the walls of the Red House. And there's very clear evidence of fires from just the daily life of cooking and heating. So fires were a normal occurrence. What is interesting is because of the density of the wood, it survived the fire. Mm-hmm. We don't have that in our modern woods. Mm-hmm. Our modern wood would be just gone.
Yeah.
It would be a pile of ash. But to burn that wood, slow smoldering fire. There's one other little thing you need to understand too, I think, is that there's a drive shed that was right beside the Red House that is also part of this. And one of the things that I've always been fascinated is as they were dismantling parts of the drive shed, there were boards with the red oxide on them that had been turned in to face inside the wall. So we are looking now at the back of the board. And so there's the red oxide paint from the original Red House and probably clapped onto the drive shed after the fire as they were rebuilding and restructuring it. So again, it's what are you going to discover? What are you going to find? And truly, yes, there have been multiple fires in the Shaw building.
Yeah, and listen, this is it's truly fascinating, and it's only the beginning of this part of the story. So I'm going to ask you folks at a future date to come back as things start to roll out. And this is one that we'd like to have an ongoing conversation about because it's truly a fascinating project. And I do hope that people will have the opportunity to visit this building and once it's completed. And I mean, that's going to be a while from now, but still, like, just knowing being able to provide updates as to what is being found as this building comes apart would be absolutely incredible. Brent, I know you'll come back, and James and Scott, I'm pretty sure that you'd be happy to join us once again on a future date.
I'll be back at any time you want me for anything you need me for, Bob. And I just want to, many people in town ask me, well, where is the Red House? It's become the question, by the way, the last few weeks on the street. So I always tell people, well, you know where the downtown Tim Hortons is, just go a couple of houses towards Smith's Fault. There it is.
Yeah.
Okay. So people can actually see it, and that people don't even know it's there and don't even realize how old it is and its importance to our town.
Absolutely. Well, Brent, James, and Scott, thank you so much for being with us today. James, final word to you.
Well, thank you. And a great vote of thanks to Scott for brokering this arrangement, because I think it's very much mutually advantageous, both for the buyers, the sellers, and the community. So I think it's a win-win in three different directions. And that all is a great credit to Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. And Scott, as I said earlier, brought this to me, and the passion with which he brought it to me and just the excitement that was involved in it. I knew that we definitely wanted to share this with our listeners. And Scott, thanks for that. And like I said, we look forward to speaking with all of you again, maybe even bring in some other players too, as this work is completed. But thank you so much for being with us today on In Focus.
Bye for now.
All right. Our guest today on In Focus, Scott Somerville with Century 21 Explorer Realty, James Forrester, whose family had owned the building, the Red House, since the 1920s, and the chair of the Heritage Perth Advisory Panel, Brent McLaren. We have been talking about the Red House that has been sold, and plans are in the works to get it rebuilt and to get it restored. I'm Bob Perot. Thanks so much for listening, and have a wonderful afternoon.